From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. There are many potential disasters on the horizon related to climate change, but most of us have probably not considered ticks and the diseases they carry to be chief among those problems. But a new book by investigative journalist Mary Beth Pfeiffer alerts us to the alarming rise in Lyme disease and what she calls the first epidemic of climate change. The book, called simply Lyme, traces how the growing incidence of ticks in our warming climate has resulted in the spread of a disease that doctors still struggle to understand and treat. Both the medical community and our government have yet to catch up on the dangers of this as yet invisible epidemic. Mary Beth Pfeiffer is an award-winning investigative journalist. She was a reporter for the Poughkeepsie Journal from 1982 to 2015. Her earlier book is Crazy in America, The Hidden Scandal of Our Criminalized Mentally Ill. She joins me to discuss her latest book, Lyme, The First Epidemic of Climate Change. Welcome to the program, Mary Beth.
Thank you, Sonali. Glad to be here.
So I confess it was with a sense of sort of dread and sort of cringing that I picked up your book, but I'm not sorry I did. It's quite fascinating. First of all, most people, I think, just don't know much about Lyme disease, and it's spelled L-Y-M-E. What is the link between Lyme disease and ticks? Ticks are insects that we usually associate with animals. They're found, you know, on dogs. When we take our dogs for a walk, we might search them for ticks. So how do ticks spread Lyme disease?
Well, back in the day, all we really had to contend with was dog ticks, at least in this area of the country, which is the Northeast. But in the last 30 years or so, something called the black-legged tick has moved north and west and south, basically from Connecticut, from Lyme, Connecticut, where it was first discovered, in terms of illness caused by the ticks. And it's now in more than half of U.S. counties, these ticks. And the ticks are spreading wildly, really, on the backs of birds, on small mammals. They are moving into Canada. They're moving into Scandinavia. They're in Russia. They're in China. These ticks are plentiful. I mean, ticks by the billions. And they are in many countries now. And, you know, this wouldn't be so bad if they didn't carry these terrible diseases. The chief disease that we are aware of is Lyme disease. In terms of numbers, it's the biggest, about 360,000 cases a year in the U.S., another 240,000 cases in Western Europe. But ticks also carry other things. So ticks are moving around the world. They are primarily moving northward, but not only northward. They are also moving poleward. So they're going to emerging in Australia, this very big problem that's just being recognized in Australia. They're in many countries. And science is basically telling us that much of this is driven by a warmer climate. Ticks simply can survive in places they could not before. Now, how are they getting there? Birds play a huge role, migratory birds. And birds have done this for eons. They have carried ticks from the tropics, for example, and from Brazil all the way northward to North America, up into Canada and the Yukon. But now, when these multitudes of birds arrive in their place of where they're migrating to, they drop a tick. The tick now survives. So this tick, one in particular, one mama tick can lay 2,000 eggs at a time. And so we have a situation where ticks are finding places to live that they could never live before. One of the huge frontiers now for Lyme disease is Canada. It's emerging very rapidly. The numbers are going up very fast. And people are just coming to know that this is a danger that they need to watch out for.
So ticks are one thing. So they're spreading. It's kind of, we're seeing, and we might likely see the spread of other insects in the same way because it's a warmer climate, so more hospitable to these insects. But then you've got the other more important dimension to this, which is that they're spreading among the disease they're spreading is one that is poorly understood and that a lot of people don't even realize they have it. So what is Lyme disease? So essentially when a tick bites you, you can get this disease, but it doesn't have the clearest of symptoms. And as of now, I understand there isn't a clear treatment plan.
Well, Lyme disease basically is, as you said, delivered by the bite of a tick. It's an eight-legged arachnid, not technically an insect. It's in the spider family. It attaches to your skin, and often we don't see it because they're very small, and they have these properties in their saliva which numbs our skin, which it provides a little anesthetic. Then it's the saliva actually cements itself to our skin, so the tick can do its dirty work.
Primarily, and so you may not even know you've been bitten because you may not feel the bite?
Exactly, because it has this sort of Novocaine kind of property. There are many other magical properties of tick saliva, which in my book ought to be put to better use. But it generally takes a period of time. We can argue about that, and scientists do, from 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours, until the Lyme spirochete passes through the tick and into your body and takes hold. And within a period of time, a couple of weeks perhaps, you might start to have flu-like symptoms. You might have joint pain, you might have headache, fever. Flu-like is the general presentation. You also may get a rash, but it's been described for a long time as a bullseye rash, namely a clear center and then red around the outside. But it often does not present that way. So that's another way that diagnoses are missed. It looks like a spider bite. It looks like hives. It looks like just a red mark, like a sunburn kind of thing. And so the kind of 30% of people that don't get the rash and don't go in for testing or don't recognize it or their doctor doesn't recognize it, that often leads to delayed diagnoses. The other thing about this disease is there's not a good test to test for it, to validate, to confirm that you have Lyme disease. So often what we have is it gets advanced. It gets to the stage where it's much more difficult to treat. But the dogma, the mainstream medicine dogma about Lyme disease is 10 to 28 days of doxycycline or a similar antibiotic will cure the infection. You will no longer be infected afterward. And that is the central controversy of Lyme disease.
Right, the Lyme wars, as they're referred to. So doctors don't agree that may necessarily be the right method. So some may prescribe that and others don't?
Well, it's not that doctors don't agree. Doctors have been told by the Centers for Disease Control and the Infectious Diseases Society of America, which is a medical society that wrote the guidelines on how to treat Lyme disease. And because those guidelines are endorsed by the CDC, doctors look to them for their guidance. And the guidance they are given is, in my view, and with a lot of scientific evidence behind that view, insufficient. Lyme disease is not easy to diagnose, as those guidelines say, and moreover, it is not easy or readily treated. Many people go on to develop long, intractable cases of Lyme disease, and you know, it's estimated that perhaps 10 to 20% of people who are treated for Lyme disease will not recover for a number of months, perhaps years, perhaps forever.
Wow.
And these people have more or less, because of this dogma, because of this idea that it's not Lyme disease anymore, these people cannot get help. They're more or less written off by the medical establishment. So, you know, they are the driving force for this book. But beyond that, the threat of climate change further driving this problem all around the planet is another reason I wrote the book, to warn people who haven't yet been bitten or whose children haven't yet been infected.
Right. So we don't really know what the line of of response should be because the government seems to not have done enough to warn people about this. You mentioned the CDC. Is the CDC, this is the Centers for Disease Control, is the CDC keeping track of the incidence of Lyme? And if so, what is this government agency saying about the increased incidence of this disease? And does the fact that it's hard to diagnose maybe does that mean that we might be undercounting it?
Well, there's little doubt that we are undercounting it. And finally, after years of denying that, the CDC admitted in 2013 that all cases of reported Lyme disease are perhaps one-tenth of the total.
Wow.
So last year, there were 38,000 cases of Lyme disease reported, more like 380,000. But the CDC could do a heck of a lot more in terms of addressing this epidemic. What it does largely is keep track of where the disease is endemic, where cases are emerging, how many cases there are. But Lyme disease has long been a funding-starved disease. Very, very little money goes to Lyme disease relative to things like West Nile virus, which is mosquito-borne, relative to Zika, which emerged, you may recall, about the time of the Summer Olympics in 2016, caused a great uproar because of its potential to cause problems in utero. There were thousands of babies in South America being born with horribly deformed heads. And then it was found to be in southern Florida and in parts of Texas. So the instantaneous response virtually was for Congress to allocate $1.1 billion, with a B, for this disease. And of that, 184 million were immediately given out by CDC. Now that's great. There's no doubt that Zika is a threat. But Lyme disease is every bit as serious a threat and causes every bit as life-altering problems as Zika. Now, that same year that the CDC gave out $184 million for Zika, it gave out $2.7 million for Lyme disease.
Wow. Does some of this disparity have to do with the fact that the symptoms of Lyme disease are not as dramatic and terrifying visibly as Zika? I mean, the photos of the, babies with abnormally small heads was did a lot probably to drive the emotional impact of the danger of that disease.
You're perfectly correct, Sonali. Lyme disease has never attracted the attention that it deserves because it has been framed as a relatively minor disease. And, when I first investigated it in 2012 as an investigative reporter, I lived in an area with among the highest rates in the world for Lyme disease. And I'd heard now and then about serious, intractable cases, but even I was not aware of how serious a disease this was until I started interviewing people who had had it for 10 and 20 years, who couldn't get a doctor to take care of them. So the reason they can't get doctors to take care of them is because when they present to doctors with these very serious long-term problems, they are told that the intense fatigue they have, the depression, the problems walking, the cognitive issues aren't Lyme disease. They are told it's something other than Lyme disease because the medical literature says the Lyme spirochete, that little bug that causes Lyme disease, is killed after antibiotic treatment. And new science, by the way, is showing that the frontline antibiotics that we are using may in fact not be working.
Wow. What does the public need to know about Lyme disease? I mean, obviously, book like yours can help to push a better awareness and possibly push better government and reaction and reaction from the medical community. But in the meantime, for those who live, near the woods, like to take walks in the woods, what should they take note of in terms of ticks and the Lyme disease they spread?
People need to know that ticks are out there and that they are spreading. And they're moving into places where there's not a great deal of awareness. That's a big problem. I'm going to a conference tomorrow in Arizona, which is known for deserts and intense heat. But there are areas of Arizona that have Lyme disease, temperate areas where there are trees, where there is forest, where there is growth. And people really need to check out the situation vis-a-vis Lyme disease in their area. Perhaps go online, see what the Lyme support groups are saying. There are Lyme support groups in virtually every state and every country. Hundreds and thousands of them, people who are trying to figure this thing out for themselves and offering advice to each other. But, you know, the first thing I would say in answer to your question is to protect yourself. If you're going for a walk along a forested trail, if you've got brush in your garden, little grassy areas where the brush is high or where there's some leaf litter, there is, in all likelihood, that's a place that ticks like to grow and have their babies and find food in the form of mammals, in the form of people. And there are things you can do. You can protect your clothes. You know, you can put permethrin on your clothing, soak it with that chemical. It's very safe. I did some research for my book. It can even be used on children's clothes, and you can wash it several times. But I think probably the bigger issue is we need to know that we have a raging epidemic out there, and it is spreading globally, and people cannot get care for it. I call this a scandal. I think it ranks up there with, you know, Watergate or Enron or what have you, in terms of just hundreds of thousands of people who have been bitten and infected and cannot get treatment.
I mean, of course, we live in a time when we have the president of the world's most, the world's largest superpower and economic powerhouse as a climate change denier, who would likely refute the links between the spread of ticks and climate change, or even accepting that ticks are spreading, might mean he has to admit that climate change is a real thing. There's definitely lots of obstacles. I imagine that because the standard antibiotic treatment, you're saying there's evidence that it doesn't work well enough, there is a great need for much more medical research into this disease. And how to test it and how to treat it, right?
Yes. And, I'm hoping that my book will bring attention to that great need. I talk about the disparities between funding for mosquito-borne diseases and tick-borne diseases. It's huge. And the funding disparity between AIDS, for example, and Lyme disease is huge. It's something like $133 a year for every case of Lyme, relative to about 7,000 a year for West Nile virus, which, by the way, infects many, many fewer people. So we need to have sort of a Manhattan Project, I would say, embarked to figure this thing out, to solve this controversy, to stop the sides from fighting each other and concentrate on fighting the tick and the pathogen. We need to pay a lot more attention to this disease and stop minimizing it and saying we've got it right. It's no big deal. We can diagnose. We can treat. We have to get past that. We are well past that. And the fact that, I interviewed people all over the world for my book. I interviewed a fellow in England who flew to California to get care for Lyme disease. I interviewed a woman in Sweden who took her daughter to England. There are people who go to Germany. They cross borders. They cross oceans. They're desperate for care because mainstream medicine offers them no help. That has to change.
Mary Beth, give out a website for your book.
Yes, my book can be found at thefirstepidemic.com. It's also, of course, on Amazon, where the price has dropped quite a bit lately, which is really good. And I would urge people to buy it and review it in particular. It really underscores the gravity of this problem, which we haven't figured out and which, to my way of thinking, is a scandal in American medicine.
That website again, thefirstepidemic.com. Mary Beth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonali. I appreciate it.
Mary Beth Pfeiffer is an award-winning investigative journalist. We've been discussing her new book, Lyme, The First Epidemic of Climate Change. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find out more about us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.